Wednesday in this place, we were blessed by the presence of Peterson Toscano. And ever since then, a story he told has been running through my head, a story about focus. Now, I can't tell the story the way Peterson did, but it includes a Russian immigrant named Vlad, who is describing the most important rules of a halfway house, and he says, "The most important thing is you must," and he can't pronounce the word focus. I'll let you think about that for a minute. That's right, that word. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble. And then Vlad makes it clear, you know, like, focus on the family, which had me laughing too hard to be too worried. But all week I've had that refrain in my head and I would kind of crack up. I was distracted by the humor and the profanity, and I thought about focus and distraction, and it made me think of this poem. There's pipelines, whales, and salmon farms, economic and tax alarms, viruses and illnesses, and Facebook posts and terrorists. There's plastic waste and full landfills, and earthquake and tsunami drills, and marijuana in little pills, and Trump that gives us all the chills. There are polar bears on shrinking ice, and great big sales that us entice, disasters based on spills of oil, and too much info on the royals. There's rising rates of interest and lower rates of religiousness, costs of housing through the roof, and refugees are still on foot. How shall we focus our intent when all around is discontent? And the news is full of fear and threat, God's goodness being misrepresented. Let's focus on the good around, focus on the common ground, focus on the love we've found, and then shut out the angry sounds of lies and fears and Facebook fights and focus on what's shining bright and work and walk toward the light. I have thought through meetings and planning and budgeting and preparations for Advent about the ways that we are distracted and how hard it is to focus. And some of that distraction, frankly, is deliberate. Look, migrants! The deliberate distractions keep us off balance, torn between fear and analysis and grace. Look, gay wedding cakes! And some of the reports leave us sputtering in the wake of the absurdity of it, not knowing if we should laugh or cry or roll our eyes. And even while we're taking times deciding, quick, watch out, homeless people. And some of the situations leave us feeling helpless, and others just leave us feeling angry. And there are background drones to what's happening. Be afraid of those people, be afraid of those people, be afraid of those people. And even while we know we are being played, we get caught up in it and we're angry. What I most liked about Peterson was that even though he is a person who has suffered things that rightly should make him angry, he has the ability to use two lenses to bring the world into focus. Like binoculars. And one of those lenses is humor, and the other is Christ's compassion. And he reminded me of the pastoral in the midst of the distractions and the anger and the people we are sometimes angry at. So I was preparing this sermon, and I was looking up quotes on focus. And most of them spoke about choosing something and focusing your attention on it. But actually, I found most of those unhelpful, and too often they were just trite platitudes. And I wonder if we might think of focus in a different way. Not the idea of focusing on a single object or desire, but the idea of finding a way to bring the world into focus. Now, if you're taking a picture, you can choose whether only the thing in the middle of your current view is in focus, or if you want the whole picture to be in focus. Depends on your camera, of course. Too much concentration on that one thing in the center can blur everything else. Too much movement between objects blurs everything. Distraction by so many different things can keep us from seeing anything clearly. Distraction by any one thing can blur everything else. But a lens that brings clarity to the way we see the world is what we alternately search for and avoid. We are afraid to see the world clearly because of what that might ask of us, demand of us, and frankly, sometimes we don't want to see ourselves too clearly. And yet we are desperate for clarity of purpose, so much so that we can attach ourselves to single issues at the expense of all else, even rationality. Clarity of vision is not that. A lens that allows us to bring the world into clearer focus can also create a purpose that will inform which things we concentrate on. We can't do it all. That's not what this is about. But it is about the ability to see past the distractions and deliberate lies to a pathway through obstacles, or determine the most important thing right now, or where our particular skills could be useful, and the thing we are called to do. For much of our religious history, the wisdom of the prophets and the mystics has been that the focus of our attention should be on God, or the revelation of God in, for us, Christ, because returning our attention to God can reduce the distractions. If God is our vision, then God provides a binocular view that gives us a depth of seeing and a depth of understanding. It doesn't matter how worthy a goal, if it lacks that depth of vision, then either we may fail at the goal, or we may succeed, but do so much damage in its pursuit that we lose relationships or even ourselves. I said earlier that there's been a background sound, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. It's sort of become a foreground song. But Carrie and Mary and I were talking this week about earworms. Now, earworms are not worms. Earworms are melodies or songs that get stuck in your head against your will. And this week I've been caught between two entirely different songs. The first is One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus. And the other is entirely different. I'm not going to sing. Calm down. It's based on the poetry of John Donne. John Donne was a poet, priest, and lover who lived between 1572-1631, one of the greatest metaphysical poets in English. He was easily distracted, usually by women, often by politics and the possibility of being executed, because his uncles were executed for sticking too closely to Catholicism, and so he became an Anglican priest. He believed very strongly in both God and the seductive quality of Satan, the adversary who distracts us. And he wrote this cry out to God, and it was recently included in a modern opera in The Way That Touched My Soul, and I did try to download it for you, but was not able to. So here it is. It's called Batter My Heart. Batter my heart, three-personed God, for you as yet but knock, breathe, shine, and seek to mend, that I may rise and stand. O'erthrow me and bend your force to break, blow, burn, and make me new. I, like a usurped town to another due, labor to admit you, but to no end. Reason, your viceroy in me, me should defend, but it is captive and proves weak or untrue. Yet dearly I love you and would be loved, but am betrothed to your enemy. Divorce me, untie or break that knot again. Take me to you, imprison me even, for I, except you enthrall me, never shall be free, nor ever chaste, except you ravish me. Batter my heart. Knock, breathe, shine, and seek to mend, that I may rise. Batter my heart. For without your battering at my heart, I forget that you are there. Amen.